Word of mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Recounting his relationship with Dungeons & Dragons, David Ewald writes, I don't know if I played D&D because other kids my age thought I was a nerd, or if they thought I was a nerd because I played D&D. The progenitor of many of today's role-playing games has gained a reputation for attracting social outcasts and misfits, and has been maligned as a gateway for teenage boys to consider Satan and suicide. Like millions of kids who played 21-side die in basements and game rooms across the country, Ewald grew up and had less time for a game that could suck up the idle hours of youth. He's among those picking up the old dice bag for a D&D revival. David Ewald is now editor for Forbes and author of the new book Of Dice and Men, The Story of Dungeons & Dragons and the People Who Play It. It hits stores on August 20th. Hello, David.
Hello.
Well, the game has wide name recognition, but I think a lot of our listeners, maybe like me, don't know why you can get drawn in that kind of way and even how it's played. So in the book, you actually contrast it with Monopoly. Bring us through that analogy and how the mechanics of D&D really differ from other games.
Well, D&D might look like a board game to the uninitiated because you are sitting at a table. Sometimes there's a map in front of you, something that looks like a board, and there can be little pieces. But at the heart of the game, it's a mental game. It's more a kind of directed storytelling where you really don't need any pieces or a map at all if you don't want to use them. The way that it's played is that one person, who we call the dungeon master, will come up with a story that could be something like, well, you're adventurers who want to go into an ancient tomb and search for treasure. And he'll sort of tell this story to the other people sitting at the table, who then add into it by saying, all right, well, I'm a knight, and my character is going to go down the hallway and open a door. And this back and forth between the dungeon master and the players where they say, well, this is what happens when you do that, and then, okay, well, I do this. And they create a narrative together. Dice and rules and things like that are added in so that it's not just make-believe. You roll the dice so there are some rules and there's some logic applied to it. It's kind of like Monopoly if you were able to do whatever you want as you travel around the board. So imagine you're playing the battleship and you move six spaces and you decide, well, I don't want this property, so I'm going to fire my guns at the thimble and I'm going to take him out of the game entirely.
So the player becomes both, as you write, audience and author of the game. You mentioned rules. What are the rules?
There are lots and lots and lots of rules. It's a loaded question in that the business here, because there's no board, there's no playing pieces to sell you, the business is to sell rule book after rule book. There are rules for if you want to attack a monster, you have to roll a number and then check this chart, and the chart will tell you, did you hit the monster? But there's also rules for doing things like casting magical spells or for knocking down a door, which can be a very complicated situation depending on whether the door is made of wood, it might be on one chart. If the door is made of stone, it might be on another chart. Depending how strong your character is, it's all going to affect the mathematics and the rules that you're using.
You talk a lot in the book about the qualities that make a good DM or dungeon master. So how instrumental is that role in making a great game of Dungeons & Dragons?
It's very important. This really is collaborative storytelling. So your enjoyment of the adventure can really be strongly affected by how well the person who's running the adventure can tell a story. A lot of times when people play the game, they'll use pre-written adventures. You can buy them from the publisher, and that'll sort of tell the dungeon master, this is the backstory, this is what happens over the course of the game. And they're kind of reading from that book to the players. But in other games, people will create fiction from whole cloth. Like, they'll decide, this is the world we're going to play in, these are the bad guys, these are the characters. It's really kind of like creating a screenplay, with the exception that the person creating the screenplay doesn't know exactly what the actors are going to do. There's a lot of folks now who are doing really interesting creative work who say that they got their start as a dungeon master, that's what taught them how to tell a story and how to appeal to an audience. Everyone from, you know, the creators of TV shows like Lost, they were big D&D players. The director of movies like Iron Man, lots of novelists, Chuck Klosterman, people like that who played D&D when they were kids now say, wow, you know, this is what got me thinking about what it takes to create an interesting story.
Which is so funny because these are some of the creatives we look to now as generative and original and innovative. Yet, a lot of stereotypes surround the D&D player. You might not admit out loud in private company. I mean, you seem to have a little guilt about the idea that you were a D&D player. What's the disconnect there?
Well, it is inherently a geeky hobby. I mean, we're talking about a hobby where you're sitting around a table with a bunch of other people and you're rolling dice and you're pretending that you're knights and wizards fighting magical monsters. So there's a certain level where I have to admit, yes, this is a geeky pastime. The game, however, has gotten a really sort of outsized and often negative reputation for a few reasons. One is that when it first came out, the game was published in 1974. And in the years following that, there was this hysteria that sort of grew up around it of the game being satanic, of it being bad for children, of it leading to things like teen suicide and crime. And so the game got the sheen around it that, like, this is deviant. If you do this, you're a weird kid and there's something wrong with you. I think that couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, this is a game that's very intellectual and creative. And you'll find that in reality, most of the people who play it are, you know, they're really bright kids or they're really bright adults. But there's still that sort of tarnish to the game that has to come off.
That fear was prevalent in the 1980s, especially. Here is a segment from 60 Minutes linking Dungeons & Dragons to a number of teen suicides.
The Pullings came home one night 3 years ago and found Bink, their son, dead on the front lawn of their home in Montpelier, Virginia. He had shot himself through the heart with his father's handgun. Until that night, they had never heard of the game Dungeons and Dragons.
We went into the kitchen, and there on the table were what we thought were just regular composition books with schoolwork in it, and much of the Dungeons and Dragons material, along with this curse he had received in the game that day that he died.
The curse that was placed on Bink's D&D character began, "Your soul is mine. I choose the time."
We're speaking with David Ewalt. He's an editor for Forbes, the author of a new book, Of Dice and Men. It's a story of Dungeons and Dragons and the people who play it, including him when he was growing up. A lot of the stereotypes about Dungeons and Dragons is these kind of misfits, but you write about it as a kind of intensely social experience. In fact, a group of gamers that you play with discuss the possibility of kicking out one of your members. Tell us what happened and why that was such a difficult experience. It gives us a kind of window into the culture.
Well, as I've said, one of the things about Dungeons & Dragons is that it's this inclusive game. So many of us who started playing Dungeons & Dragons started when we were nerdy little kids, and that gaming table was a place where we found some solace, where we found other kids who were interested in the things that we were interested in, who liked fantasy novels, who liked math and logic. And so part of the reason why it's meaningful to us is because it was, to some degree, a refuge. So when I'm older and I started playing with these new friends, you know, we're now adults. We don't have a lot of time. We're struggling to find a couple hours each week to sit down at this table after work and play. And a few of the players that we roped in, people that we found on the internet, you know, sometimes you find someone who you're just not compatible with, who has a difficult personality. There was one player who was, you know, he fit a lot of the stereotypes about. He was really geeky. He was confrontational. He was obsessed with the rules. And we just started to think, what are we going to do about this guy? We can't play with him. But it really hurt to think, wow, are we really going to be the people who exclude someone from playing Dungeons and Dragons? This was our refuge. Are we going to deny that to someone else? Thankfully, we didn't have to kick him out of the group. He went and you know, had other obligations of his own and sort of disappeared. But it was difficult. You never want to have to deny someone else something that was very valuable and important to you.
You did at one point give it up altogether in college, and you're pursuing journalism and politics. I'm curious about what brought you back to the table, which you seem a little guilty about. Why?
Yeah, well, I played the game a lot when I was in high school, and I was kind of one of those nerdy kids. When I went off to college, you know, I wanted to reinvent myself. I didn't want to find myself sort of in the nerdy ghetto. I wanted to do something different. And when I returned to it, I was a little worried about, well, what happens? You know, maybe, you know, I'm a new person now. Do I become like that nerdy, insecure high schooler that I used to be? And I'm glad to say I didn't. But what caught my attention was that I was at that point, I was a reporter, and I was writing about the world of technology and particularly the video game industry for Forbes. And I would go around to conventions and to industry events, and I would talk to the people who run video game companies and who design video games. And just in conversation, I would say to them, well, how did you get started in this business? What made you want to create video games? And the vast majority of the time, really surprising how often, people would say to me, well, I played a lot of Dungeons and Dragons when I was a kid. Mm. And so that made me think, maybe it's time to get back into this and to see, you know, with adult eyes, why is this game so engrossing and why does it attract these creative people?
So many of those contemporary video games, however, do have this immediacy. You know, you don't have to roll the die. You can make really quick decisions, and there are a lot of different adventures that you can choose. Why then do you think Dungeons & Dragons, the old school game, is having a revival now?
I think there's a couple reasons. One is that the people who played the game during its heyday, which was the late 70s and most of the 1980s. Those people are all adults now. They have disposable income, and they've also got some nostalgia starting up. They're starting to think about the good old days and be like, wow, I really used to love playing that game. I haven't done it in years. Maybe now's the time to start up again. There's also, I think, a growing understanding of the game and acceptance of it in the context of video games going everywhere. Everyone at this point plays video games, whether you play, you know, for 5 minutes on your cell phone or whether you play something on Facebook. There's very few people left in the United States who are not playing any kind of video game. And I think as people have started to play more games, things like role-playing games and Dungeons and Dragons are far less alien than they used to be. If you already think of yourself as, well, yeah, I like playing games. I play Candy Crush a lot. It's no longer such a big leap to go and sit down and try a game of Dungeons & Dragons.
David Ewald, senior editor at Forbes, where he writes about technology, games, and geek culture. His new book is called Of Dice and Men, the story of Dungeons & Dragons and the people who play it. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The book comes out on August 20th, and you can find reviews and more on it at wordofmouthradio.org. There's more word of mouth coming right after the break. Please stay with us.